All right, this is Foxfire with a something different. I think I did something completely different show last time, too. It's not that I've given up on the incredibly awesome This Old Hack project. It's just that it's been about 115 degrees this week, and had some life stuff going on, so I really haven't had a chance to work on any renovation projects. I guess I could go out and, you know, work on the lawn more, but actually that's going to be for a new series. I'm going to try to go to working on some machines, start with some simple machines, you know, like lawnmowers and motors and stuff like that, and eventually get into working with cars and do some different stuff. So, this is an interesting topic, to say the least. It doesn't have anything to do with hacking at all, so if you're looking for a technical segment, this isn't going to be one. Pretty much the reason I decided to do this today was last weekend in Chantilly, Virginia, there was a meeting of a group of people called the Bilderbergers, the Bilderberg Group. And you can Google right now Chantilly, Chantilly, media blackout, or do something like go to Google News and type in Bilderberg, Bilderberg, and see how many mainstream news sources actually covered this meeting. And the reason I say that's significant is because of the guest list. It's really quite interesting. The people that attend this conference, and yet CNN, Fox News, none of these sources actually, you know, seem to wanted to cover it. Of course, got like the director of the NSA, foreign minister from Turkey, foreign minister from the Netherlands, CEO of the Spanish Telecom, the Ben Bernanke, the federal chairman of the Federal Reserve, Carl Bildt, the Swedish foreign minister, Kenneth Clark, member of parliament, and let's see, there's 100 on the list here. I'm not going to read all of them. There's some pretty good ones here. I'm just scrolling through so I don't have to read all of them. This is also a live, kind of a live show. I won't be editing this. I'm recording it on a conference call. This is a different format for me today because I put things off and had some side projects. Let's see, the chairman and CEO of Washington Post. I haven't even got to the good stuff yet. Here's one that's kind of important to note. James A. Johnson, the vice chairman of Perseus LLC. He's Obama's guy that's choosing the vice president. So one of these people is going to be choosing your future vice president. Henry Kissinger, he's a real winner. And I'm going to go down because I know the Prince of Orange, the Queen of the Netherlands, Richard Pearl, Condoleezza Rice, David Rockefeller, I mean, there's just like Paul Wolfowitz, Robert Zolecki from the World Bank, and, you know, like I said, there's pretty much, it's a list of all really high-level people. Oh, what's the guy from Microsoft? Craig Mundy, he's there. One of the founders of Google, he was there. And actually, Tony Blair was in town. He's not on the list, but I know he was in town that weekend. And so he may or may not have been there. Also, Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel, he was in town, but he's not on the list as well. But, I mean, you can just Google the Bilderberg 2008 list. Or if you want some real interesting stuff, you can go to just Google the Bilderberg list and go to the wiki page, and you'll see, like, Bill and Melinda Gates and all sorts of, you know, really people that have a lot of freaking money and a lot of freaking power. And, you know, people say, okay, well, you know, why does it matter? But, I mean, this is really, I mean, really, how do you get 100 of the, you know, most influential people in the world, foreign royalty? Oh, Prince William, you know, he can't fart without sucking press file. Oh, I can't talk like that on this radio show, can I? I'm used to my other show. You know, he can't, you know, barely move without somebody following him around. You know, a lot of these people, you know, are very watched by their press, and many of them misled their local news agencies, and which had to be contacted by people in different places to let them know that what their representatives were doing. And I actually wanted to go back into a little history before I got into the whole list of everything, but I figured if I'm going to lose you, I better get you hooked in with, like, who the current people were. Maybe you'll be interested. So, you know, I'm going to go into some history here, and there's some interesting stuff that people may or may not know, and this is all factual. You can research it for yourself and check it out and see what I'm talking about here. And I'm going to go back to June 18th, 1815. Napoleon and Britain are at war, France and Britain, you know. So their battle's over, and Britain has won, obviously. But the financial markets in Europe, and the news hasn't reached Europe, hasn't reached the mainstream on who's won the battle. And so a representative for a certain group was able to bring information 20 hours before the rest of the country knew. So one man, he knew 20 hours beforehand because he had a special messenger there on the location come straight to him 20 hours before. And so what he did is he put out the rumor that Napoleon had won the war. Okay, he put out the rumor at the you know, the British Stock Exchange, right, that Napoleon had won the war. Well, when this rumor got around, everybody sold their stocks. So the stock market dropped by 98%. Okay, so what he did was he already had a bunch of freaking money. And so he bought everything that he could, you know, for literally pennies on the pound, you know, like 98% of the market. So instead of something being worth a dollar, it's worth 2 cents. So he bought everything he could get his hands on for next to nothing. So in 20 hours, less than a day, this happened, okay? So 20 hours later, everybody found out, oh, wait, he was wrong, and they start buying up the stock again. Well, that you just, you know, just increased his revenues because he owned everything, and they were paying, you know, 98% more to buy the crap back if they wanted to buy it back, if that's how they did it, you know. But otherwise, he had, you know, everything, and they had to buy it back from him if they wanted it back, and they had to pay, you know, full price or higher to get it back, which gave him just that much more money. This guy's name is Nathan Rothschild. And he's part of a family that's been around for a while, and there's still Rothschild Holdings and workings, and they're into a whole bunch of stuff still today. So, you know, he pretty much ruled Britain financially, which in Britain had defeated France, so they pretty much ran Europe, and so he ran kind of, you know, Europe. So then the British Empire, it started to expand, And the previous empire that was existent in the area was the Ottoman Empire. And they had reached their peak south of Austria, around, you know, Bosnia, Serbia, that kind of thing. And what happens with empires is that they can only grow so large with their military and bureaucratic status before they start to be kind of hollow, like a hollow shell, and they start to kind of collapse back in on themselves. So the Ottoman Empire, it reached its boundaries, and it couldn't sustain itself anymore. So what happens is, when these empires start to crumble, then newly formed alliances start to be drawn into the places where the former empire had been and just establish their control over those territories. Franz Ferdinand, he got shot in Serbia. He was the, I guess he was the Archduke, or Prince of the Austro-Hungarian faction. I guess people will say that the group, the Black Hand, was the group that killed him. And people can say that, and I'm going to try to stay away from speculation here, but people will say that, you know, it was the French and British that were behind the Black Hand that had the guy killed, that started World War One, which started right there at the, you know, where the Ottoman Empire was receding. So they've got all these factions that are trying to get in and claim all this stuff that's about to be up for sale, because the Ottomans are, you know, running away. And so, of course, then we had World War One. Then in 1919, after this terrible war had gone on, the powers that be, tried to form a League of Nations and convince the citizens of the world that they needed a global governing body to prevent this from ever happening again. The League of Nations didn't fly in 1919, but 1921, the Council on Foreign Relations was formed in America with the purpose to abolish all nation states in favor of a world government. And this was, and they finally got their foot in with the CFR and went from there. But there was two different ways of thinking with these elites, these powers that you know, they run the corporations and the military and the governments of these foreign countries, and they get together and they, you know, talk about stuff and how they're gonna get more power and more money. So, but there was two ways of thinking. One group, they decided that they were just gonna, the easiest way would be to just take the world by, you know, force and completely domination through military. And the other half believed that they could do it through a slow bureaucratic process. And so they split into the National Socialist and the Fabian Socialist. And actually, you can look up, you know, Tony Blair, he's a Fabian Socialist. And socialism, the Fabian Socialism, is still very common in Europe today, obviously, because the National Socialists failed, but they, you know, they caused a lot of destruction and very nasty stuff. In 1934, the American industrialists that were on the National Socialist side, they approached Major General Smedley Butler, he was a United States Major General, with a plot for a coup to overthrow the United States government and set up National Socialism in America in 1934. They wanted him to lead 500,000 men and take over the functions of government. And at the same time, National Socialism was taking root in Germany. Let's see, and actually even the King of England had to step down. Edward VIII, he abdicated because he had public support of this German leader.
Go on, son.
Little interruption there. Yeah, it's kind of hard to get stuff recorded during the daytime sometimes around here. It's usually quieter outside. So, let's see, back to where I was at. So, yeah, National Socialism was taking root in Germany, and Edward VIII abdicated. He was seen, shaking hands with the German National Socialist leader. I think you guys might know who I'm talking about. But the Fabian Socialists were able to maintain control of U.S., Britain, and Russia. So then you had this, axis of National Socialists and this allied force of Fabian Socialists. So with the failure of the National Socialists, once again, the same people got together and proposed a world body to prevent war from breaking out again, just as they'd done with the attempt to set up the League of Nations and then the CFR. These guys, they make a lot of money off selling bombs and guns to different people so they can go out and kill each other, and then they can get paid more money to go out and clean up after them. Rebuild stuff, because they own the manufacturing facilities for the guns and the tanks and the bombs and the planes. They own the mines where the materials come from. They own the companies that build the structures, and they own the companies that get the raw materials to build the structures. They own the companies that sell the gas to run the machines to do all of this. They run the companies that pump the oil out of the ground, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if some particular group doesn't exactly go along with their plan, they just, can change that government to however they want it to be. This actually wasn't even, I didn't even plan on talking about Mohammad Mosaddegh, but I think it was 1954, they, Kermit Roosevelt and the CIA had the democratically elected leader of Iran. I'm not sure if they had him murdered, but I know they had some of his staff members murdered, and they overthrew his government there. And I think that's had something to do with nationalizing the oil fields, but that's not exactly what I wanted to talk about, but it's an interesting side note. So, in 1945, the victors of World War II, they set up the United Nations, and then the World Council began formation of the Continental Superstates. And the Continental Superstates, that's your, the unification of Europe. So, in 1949... the Council of Europe was formed. This was the European Free Trade Agreement. And it was basically okay, we're all here in the same part of the world. We're going to set up this free trade agreement so we can open up the borders and, ship goods back and forth and stuff like that. Then in 1954, they got together with the actual intent of forming the European Union. And this group met in the Bilderberg Hotel, I think it was Oosterbeek, Holland. I can't spell that. And so they got together in 1954, and then they've met until the 1980s without any real press coverage at all. Okay, you've got your world leaders, royalty, industrialists, bankers, heads of media, all the big players getting together, and of course, because they own the media, that's one of the reasons that they don't cover it. So up until the 80s, they hardly got any notice, and then in the 90s, they started getting a little more press coverage. That's when people like Jim Tucker started researching the group, and then Daniel Estulin, he's written several books on the topic. And I think Jim Tucker's been doing it for about 30 years, and Daniel Uselman's been doing it for about 20. And so that brings me to me. I've been researching it for maybe a year in depth, and this has been my main project that I've been working on. I've attempted to, had a couple of aborted attempts at setting up a website, and it's really kind of difficult because it's kind of like a rabbit hole. And the more you look into it, the more interesting stuff you find, but it's kind of hard to stay on topic and cover one particular thing while at the same time getting the overall, the big picture across to people. So I registered a domain called crimespace.org, and with the intention of making it like a parody on MySpace, because at the time I was kind of upset with MySpace. They'd just been bought out by Rupert Murdoch, and they were censoring anti-News Corp material on people's MySpace pages. And I did try this experiment where you had to, you copied a block of test, copied a block of text over, and put it on there, and it was this big rant that somebody had come up with against them and everything. And like, sure enough, like, you know, one of my I don't use it, so the account had actually, when I came back and looked at it like several months later, what I'd pasted on there was no longer there. Somebody had come in and removed it. So it did actually happen. Now, like I said, I wanted to make a parody of MySpace because I figured, okay, you've got these 100 people, and then you could show how they've got their circle of friends or whatever. You know, you add friends to their MySpace page and show how this Bilderberg member is associated with these groups and how they all interact. And then I wanted to come up with some way to make a social networking map of these people. Because, I mean, like Facebook or something like that, where you've got, like, all these interconnected activities that's not completely obvious to the public, but at the same time they're moving and shaking the world in the background through their connections, just like it works in any other society. And then I just started arbitrarily with their with one person at a time, trying to do research on them. And like I said, it was just an exhaustive thing. It's like just so much information. I mean, like, the first person I picked had, like, you know, worked for, like, I don't know, 20 different corporations, and he's been working with, you know, like, the airlines and the water industry, and he's, like, honorary royalty in the Netherlands. You know, it just goes on and on and on. It's like, I wanted to research every connection, every corporation, every, you know, person that he's interacted with, and play out the whole 6 degrees of separation for that one person, and then every connection that he had, and go down the line, you know, and say, I've got a list of 100 people that's, you know, at least, you know, multiplies it by, makes it 600. And then if you, you know, that's just the people themselves. And then if you go in and research the corporations that they're associated with just at the time that they attended the conference, then that doubles it to like 1,200, you know. And so it's just, for one person to actually have to do this, you know, in any frame of time that's, you know, conceivable, then it just wasn't going to work. So pretty much the site just idled. I messed with it off and on, mainly just did research and whatnot. And I found out a lot of interesting stuff. No, I did not just stop talking randomly. Had other little interruption there. Like I said, I'm not going to edit the show. I'm just going to send it off to the Enigma because, well, I'm late once again, and I didn't want to completely leave him hanging. So I'm going to, you know, if I have to sound dumb, then that's okay. So what I wanted to do was, you know, if I couldn't really copy MySpace, because there's a lot of CSS and Flash and all that crap that I didn't feel like, you know, messing with, because I hate all that, that crap people put on their sites. And I really hate MySpace, and I hate the way it looks, and I really didn't want my site to look crappy like MySpace does. So after coming to that decision, I decided that I was going to mess around with different web layouts. And no, I'm not trying to get you to go check out the site. I'm sure you already have by now, and there's actually nothing there. It's just like one page on a blog that I've done, because I just now, in the past week, another thing I was working on is getting my stuff moved over, and I'll go into that in a minute when I finish this up here. Yeah, it was just, and then I wanted to put a wiki up, and the idea was I'd go on and get people interested and get some help with this, like, get one person to pick one person off the list and do an extensive research project on that one person, and then post it to the wiki, and then, you know, the hyperlink, as you go on, you link back and forth in the wiki like a Wikipedia, you know, so where, like, you've got the same person that's mentioned in this corporation and this event and this other person's bio, and then it all links together, and you can actually navigate through the wiki and actually see the connections between, like, an internal wiki, no external links at all. So you could actually see the connections internally between just this group of people to start with. But, you know, I never really advertised it or anything or asked anybody for any help with it, because it was just the interface for the wiki was awkward. I was on dial-up. I was trying to move forward with some kind of, like, a modern sort of look with, like, videos and, like, you know, media and stuff like that, and not just flat text, and, you know, make it so it would be interesting and, you know, kind of catchy, but really I mainly wanted to focus on the information aspect. But, you know, if it's not somewhat aesthetic, then people aren't going to be interested in it at all. So I started using WordPress on there, and I really liked WordPress, and I had my Reddit feed on the front page there, so it wasn't really a static page. It was kind of dynamic. I did do some blog posting on some interesting research I had been doing, and then, like, different stories I would find about these people and stuff they were doing, is I would post it to Reddit and the World News or whatever, World Politics, world business, something like that, and then have a feed of information mainly pertaining to the actions of these Bilderbergers. So, and they do a lot. I mean, like, pretty much what I do is I set up a Google alert for the first maybe 15, 20 people on the list, and the corporations that they were linked with. And there's just, boom, I mean, I'd get 50 emails a day from Google Alerts with updates on different stuff that they were doing, or their corporations were doing, or interesting stuff like that. So they're definitely not just, you know, a boring group of people that meet in a smoky room. They're actually doing interesting stuff that's not necessarily very good either. Like, the first problem that I came across was Etienne Devignon. He's the honorary vice chairman of the Bilderberg Group. He also works with Suez, Trek Bell, and he's in with the airlines and auto racing, and he's just, like, 70-something years. He's, like, probably, like, 78 now or something. And he's, you know, his picture, you Google it, it's his name, you know, it's spelled E-T-I-E-N-N-E-D-A-V-I-G-N-O-N. And you just do a Google image search on him. And he's like this kindly looking old guy with a little pipe. And, you know, he just looks like your grandpa, you know. But, like, he's actually like this world leader. He's like a lobbyist for Suez. And he's also, like, in charge of the development program for Africa. So, now, this company, Suez, was mentioned in the recent independent movie called Flow for the Love of Water. And it's pretty much about the privatization of municipal water facilities. So pretty much what this one company wants to do is buy up all the water rights. And that way they can have the market cornered on your drinking water. You think it's bad with oil, wait till you're paying $4 a gallon for water or something like that that you have to have to survive. And not just like buying it at the store either. I mean, like, actually at your house. Like in South Africa, they've got this new plan where they've put prepaid water meters outside people's houses to where if you want to drink water, you have to go out and put money in the machine to be able to drink water. So that's, you know, kind of a messed up thing. And, like, there was a story, 5 million dead in the Congo, and it was on, like, NPR. And I found this story probably a year before it was ever on NPR, and I posted it around, and everybody was like, oh, yada-da-da-da-da, it's just a bunch of crap, you know, and then it comes out on NPR, and everybody's like, oh, my God, you know, and it's, Belgium and Devignon, he's, you know, involved with this slaughter in the Congo. I mean, it's the whole African situation is like these Europeans come in and they want the natural resources, and so they pay the one group off to kill the other group off, and they give the one group the guns to go kill the other group that doesn't have the guns, and so then they control this, you know, mercenary force, and then after so many years, the situation gets so bad where they're just going around arbitrarily slaughtering people and doing much worse things that I don't even want to mention, that some other group comes in and is like, oh, we're going to fix things by coming in and giving this other group a bunch of guns. You know, it's just a never-ending process. And so after I'd done research on this one particular person, you know, I found out that he's not this kindly old man. He's not your grandpa. You know, he's really a bad dude that's just about the money and the power. Well, it's just about the power because they've already got all the money. So they just want more power and more land and more resources. So that's just that one person. And I'm not going to go into to any of the rest of them. But what I've done is I've moved my site over. I found me and my wife got around sitting around one night, and we decided that she wanted to set up a website, and I explained to her that I can only host one website on my account without upgrading on GoDaddy, and my account on GoDaddy was about to expire, so I wanted to move somewhere else anyway, because one of the things in their terms of service is you can't have hacking-related content. And that does mean security-related content, too, apparently, hosted on your website on their service. And one of the things I plan on doing in the future is setting up a security and hacking-type blog for stories along that line. Because, yes, I do know how to use a computer, apparently. But I didn't want to get it shut down, and I didn't want to really do anything with my website if I wasn't going to be keeping it. So I just kind of having left it alone, messing with WordPress and stuff like that and how to get it configured the way I want it to. And actually, I've pretty much stuck with the idea of not using a standard website anymore. I don't want to code any HTML anymore. I don't want to have to type in links and references and do any of that stuff. And then, you know, put it in through the W3C verification to make sure it's valid and all that crap. You know, you can pretty much skin a blog to look like a website and all the things valid, HTML, you know, I can change the theme whenever I want. I can adjust the columns and the layouts and add feeds. I can link to Flickr. I can embed, I use Scribefire, so it makes it really easy to embed video in the site, which Scribefire is really nice. It's a plug-in for Firefox. And pretty much you hit F8 and it pulls up this little box at the bottom of the screen, and it's got like a text box in there, and it you just type in what you want to post to your blog down there, and it formats it properly. And if you need to edit the HTML, it does have an actual like thing where you can switch over to the HTML view and change things around with the HTML, but it gives you the option to think to link to Flickr, and definitely it lets you embed videos from YouTube. It actually has its own separate YouTube preview, so you can actually search YouTube from Scribefire and find the video, and it'll embed it natively in the thing for you. And then you just hit submit, and you've got your, assuming you've got your blog information already entered into the program, it'll submit directly from the browser to your blog, and you don't have to actually log into your administrator account and do anything else, unless you want to go back and change something later on. So we picked a new hosting service called HostMonster, and I'd never heard of it before, but I think the Whois actually came back to some Bluehost maybe, too, so it might be the same company under a different name. I'm not exactly sure how that works. Apparently there's a big struggle with GoDaddy and domains by proxy. If you use domains by proxy and GoDaddy, they're in the same building, but they don't communicate with each other, so they're supposed to send you separate login information for your account and all this. And, apparently there's some big horror stories with switching over. But since the account was all in her name, then she had to take care of that, and so she took care of the hard part. And so with the HostMonster, you get and no, I don't work for them. I'm not trying to advertise. I'm just saying they've got like unlimited accounts, unlimited bandwidth, and unlimited storage, which is perfect for another project I'm planning on working on in the future as well, because I think they allow you to do non-commercial streaming audio since you've got unlimited bandwidth and unlimited storage, and you could host legal audio and stream it or whatever. So that being said, I've went and installed WordPress on there, and then it failed miserably, and then I realized that they had a one-touch installation, which was really freaking simple. And so that's pretty much the WordPress installation on the site. And that's pretty much it. So now that I've said all that, if anybody would like to research and any of these people and post your information and your findings on the blog, you're welcome to sign up and join the project. And this has been another episode of Hacker Public Radio.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net